Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome everybody to the End Zone Falcon Zone Super Pro Football Show. I am Jeremy York, joined once again by Mr. Reggie Walker and Coach Haywood Hill. How you guys doing this week?
Doing good, Jeremy.
Doing great, Jeremy.
As always, it is good to have you guys on as we will tackle the world of football in the only way we really know how and, in my opinion, the most entertaining way. Today we've got a bunch of things to talk about. We're going to get into the Falcons-Baltimore game. We're going to talk about some injury reports as well for them. We're going to talk about the Percy Harvin trade and this one practice squad guy that was let go. I don't know if anybody heard that one. We'll get into that one. But first, we're going to start, as we always do, with our weekly pick'em, I guess so to say. And we'll just jump right at it. First game we had on the block was the Atlanta Falcons going to Baltimore to play the pesky Ravens. And, well, we all know that didn't turn out well for Atlanta. Also, Kansas City and San Diego, where Kansas City was able to pull out that victory. I know that hurt a lot of people in Vegas. Let's see here. We all had San Diego in that one, so that kind of blew that up. Reggie was the only one who had Atlanta, and I understand why you did. I actually thought they had a chance for a second, but Baltimore pulled that out. Minnesota at Buffalo, we all had Buffalo, and if I'm not mistaken, they won that one. And then Detroit and New Orleans, and watching New Orleans go down in flames was quite nice there towards the end. Reggie, you had the call on Detroit on that one. Pretty much we're all middle of the pack. I think we were all 2-2 this week, which just proves that it's hard to predict NFL games. Reggie, you still lead at 19-9. Coach is at 15-13, and I am at 12-16. Let's see. Oh, we'll get right into this week's games. You know, we'll start real quick with the game in London, which will, oddly enough, keep me from a few activities I would normally be doing on a Sunday morning. It'll be a 9:30 a.m. start. The Detroit Lions will play the Atlanta Falcons. Even though I'm pretty sure I know where you're at on this one, who you got, Reggie?
Well, actually, you know what? With that defense that Detroit has, they've got the number one ranked defense. I'm going to go the opposite way and pick against my boys and say I'm going with the Detroit Lions on this.
I'm not going to say I'm surprised because maybe this could be the fire that will light under the Falcons and they'll actually, you know, prove your picks wrong for once. Coach,
right.
Who do you have?
I also have to say Detroit. I don't. Detroit has on their defensive line right now. Plus with the ups, I think that Detroit will overwhelm them in this game defensively.
Yeah, whether Calvin plays or not, I don't think it matters. It's going to matter all that much. I think Matt Stafford's going to show the London people an air show, and I hope Matt Ryan can do the same, but I don't feel good about the secondary not being able to stop anybody for the Falcons. So, yeah, I got Detroit in that one as well. Now, are you guys going to get up to watch that game?
Yeah, I definitely will be up to watch it.
Actually, Jim, I won't get a chance to see it. I will be at 4 a.m. actually conducting some other business, but I will be checking on the game here on.
Well, regardless, I mean, I think that's dedication enough that the three of us are going to at least alter our day a little bit to try to give this the recognition it needs, I guess. Let's go to tonight's game here just in a few short minutes. San Diego at Denver. Coach, who do you have in this one?
Well, you know, this is one of those tough games again, one of those picks where San Diego is playing really well. It's hard to beat Denver at home. Peyton Manning is on a roll. So right now I have to give the home team my pick would be Denver because they're playing in Denver.
Okay. Reggie?
I mean, Peyton Manning's on a roll at Denver. I just don't see San Diego beating them at home.
Yeah, home field is a big deal, but I'm not afraid to say that I think between Joe Flacco and Phillip Rivers, they are some dark horse candidates for MVP, at least so far through this part of the season. I'm going to call the upset. I'm going to say San Diego is going to go into Denver and maybe squeak this one out. It's not going to be a defensive game whatsoever. It's going to be I can score more than you. But I'm going to go ahead and call that one. So I got to plus I got to make some kind of move to catch you, Reggie, in the standings here. I'm just not doing good.
Don't be mad, Jeremy. I'm trying to catch up. I'm embarrassed. I'm almost at 500.
Well, earlier I was listening to part of a podcast from the new Rich Eisen podcast. And he said that a lot of people give him a lot of crap in fantasy leagues because they're like, you work for NFL Network. You shouldn't have got ran over by a real estate guy. And he's like, you just never know these things. That's why you play. And I kind of feel the same way. It's like just because we do this show and we do some of the other things that we do doesn't mean we know everything. You never know how a game's going to play out.
On any given Sunday, that's always been the rule of thumb.
Yep, also my favorite football movie, Any Given Sunday. But let's see, next game, we've got Houston at Tennessee. I'm kind of torn on this game myself, but I do feel like Houston's going to eke out a victory. Ryan Fitzpatrick and his beard, I think it's a person all to itself. They should almost get flagged for 12 men on the field every time, but I think Houston is going to edge this one out. Jadeveon Clowney may actually play for the first time since week one. That makes that trio of him, Cushing, and J.J. Watt just probably one of the best trios on any defense. I got Houston in this one. Reggie, who do you have?
I'm definitely going with Houston. Tennessee is going to start Zach Mettenberger this week. So, got
bless
a rookie third string. Deer in the headlights, I think they eat him for lunch.
Coach?
Likewise, I agree. I think that the fact that we're, you know, at almost the midpoint of the season right now. Their quarterback has had no reps on the field whatsoever outside of preseason. I think J.J. Watts is going to put a lot of pressure and basically is going to impose his will against Tennessee's offensive line. So look for a lot of sacks out of him and a lot of step-up plays and miscues. So, again, the Texans will walk away with this.
And in the last game, we've got Andrew Luck versus Big Ben Roethlisberger. Coach, who do you have in this one?
You know, again, these picks are getting tougher and tougher. The fact that Pittsburgh found some light at the end of their tunnel in their last game spoke volumes to where they're trying to go. But, again, you know, Luck is a consistent guy. So, this again, I'm going to have to go with Luck on this one, and that's literally because I'm picking this as a Luck game. I think that he will have a little bit more under his belt and a little more consistency right now. But again, you know, it's one of those toss-up games because Pittsburgh, you know, they're on their heels and they know they have to win against some big, you know, reputable opponents such as the Colts.
Yeah, I do agree that Pittsburgh at least played the best 3 minutes of any game I've seen in a long time. That 24 points, I still can't believe. I've seen the video 3 or 4 times, plus watching it live. But it's just hard to go against Andrew Luck right now. He's about one of the surest bets in the league as far as carrying the team. So I got Indy as well. Reggie, who do you have?
I'm definitely going Indianapolis. Pittsburgh defense is just way too suspect. I think Luck carves them up.
I definitely think so. So to recap, we all have Detroit over Atlanta. Nobody hold that against Reggie. You guys have Denver over San Diego. I have the Chargers. We all have Houston over Tennessee. And I do think that's going to be a lot closer than it looks from afar. But and we also have Andrew Luck and the Colts against Pittsburgh. So we'll see how that shakes out. Hopefully it does pretty good. Speaking of shaking things up a little bit, Friday afternoon, I had gotten off work a little early. I was enjoying the weather outside. It was really nice. I was sitting on the porch swing, just not really doing much anything. And then I see a tweet from Jay Glazer that says, Percy Harvin has been traded to the Jets for a second to third round pick. I'm thinking, okay, well, you know, Schefter gets his account hacked a lot. Somebody's on Jay Glazer's account. But then it sits for a few minutes and nobody's saying anything. So I decide I'm going to go ahead and start posting this up. I can always take it down. By the time I post it up, his second tweet comes through. Let me repeat, Percy Harvin is now a Jet. And the way this is all played out, I'll get you guys' take on it first, and then I'll kind of try to fill in the blanks with all that I've learned about this just since Friday afternoon. What do you guys think about Percy Harvin being a Rex Ryan employee now?
For me, it was shocking initially because I had not heard all the background information. But it makes sense knowing the type of coach that Pete Carroll is. I think maintaining or trying to maintain some semblance of your locker room, and they're already kind of struggling a little bit right now. I was not aware that this guy was the time bomb that he is. But it was surprising. I think if anybody would have taken a chance, I mean, Rex Ryan is obviously, and the Jets are definitely in need of a wide receiver right now, so they were pretty desperate to get this guy. It really kind of saddens me to know that, you know, this guy has all of this talent, but you know, his issues seem to be between his ears. So, surprise, yes. I still don't. I think he does the, you know, lackluster with the Jets as well. I don't think he makes a difference.
For myself,
I'm not surprised. If you go back and look at Percy Harvin's record in Florida, he had some of the same issues there, some disciplinary things. But I think with this, it was a layered thing. I think a lot of it had to do with some of his issues with playing time, the fact that he had been hurt most of the time he was there. He's very productive when he's on the field, but you have to keep him on the field. And I think that played a role into a lot of things, considering, you know, look what happened with Golden Tate, as well as some of the receivers that are emerging there. So where was the comfortable fit for Percy Harvin over time? I think that also played a role. And there were some locker room issues. There were some things that were going on in the locker room, from my understanding, with a few of the players there, and it was becoming a very uncomfortable environment, and that is their Garden of Eden. So when you have a lot of little mishaps, if you will, for the lack of better terms, I think this is what pushed him. But I think it was getting to a point where it was becoming so detrimental to the team that for them to trade him for a conditional pick spoke volumes, and also to dispel the rumor that it might have been a situation that it had something contractually for the future to do with Wilson as he comes off of his rookie campaign. That's not true, and the reason why I say that not true, putting on an agent's hat for a moment, is because this is a conditional pick. It did not come with any money involved with it, so those are the things that you have to look at.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And some of the things I did learn is about some of the incidents where he had verbal or physical altercations with some pretty big players over there in Seattle, including Russell Wilson, and just various things like that. And supposedly this is not even to free up cap space. This has nothing to do with Russell Wilson's impeding contract coming up. The parallel that I actually come up with, actually earlier today, I was talking to some people about it, and I said I'm slowly seeing a pattern, and the common denominator is the University of Florida back when Urban Meyer was in charge. Everybody has this like weird baggage, or everybody seemed to have something going on. The three biggest cases clearly being Tim Tebow, Aaron Hernandez, and Percy Harvin, who were all on the same team, I believe, down there, and they're all under Urban Meyer. So at some point, we kind of have to almost look at, you know, Ohio State at this point and say, are we about to have a lot of personal issue guys coming out of Ohio State?
Well, that's going to be interesting to see, Jeremy. I think that that is a great parallel that you're drawing, but then, you know, the question mark still remains what happens now with Ohio State, and if this same type of behavior rears its ugly head all the time.
Yeah, that is an interesting perspective on it. I didn't really think about it like that. Although I did see an interesting broadcast with Urban Meyer where he was chronicling his time at Florida, and a lot of people did not realize that, you know, he was going through a pretty rough time while he was there, you know, through depression and a whole lot of different things. So maybe that was the reason that he did not have the focus on the disciplinary side of things. I mean, I think the same can be said for Jimbo Fisher, you know, down at Florida State, and then the whole thing with Winston, Mr. Winston. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a Florida thing, Jeremy. Who knows?
You know, it could be, and I definitely see that parallel with FSU. And it was just odd that I started to think about it because I usually don't have the latest, greatest video games, and I don't even get that much time to play them anymore. But the NCAA football game I have, I can go back and play that particular team. And usually they don't put the names on them, but I can recognize, you know, number one, that's Percy Harvin. 15 is Tebow, obviously. And as you go through some of the numbers and you look at the guys that were on that team, I started looking back at the roster, and it seems like every one of them seemed to have something going on. But, you know, I know that's present on a lot of other teams as well. I mean, we could get into all the college problems and talk all day long about them. But as we come back to Harvin, I feel like, I mean, he's only, what, 26, 27, 28 years old, something like that. And as talented as he is and as injury-prone as he is, this pretty much buys Rex Ryan his ticket to the end of the year before he gets let go from there and starts working for ESPN. And the number one thing for Jets fans, and I've spent most of the week explaining this to them, for Jets fans, this will let you know if Geno Smith is your guy going forward, because clearly Michael Vick's not going to be, because he's still not studying playbooks or defensive progressions or anything like that. So this – pretty much, if you're Geno Smith and you can't make it work with Percy Harvin, then in next year's draft, they're probably grabbing Mariota, Bo Wallace, any of those guys that come out.
Yeah, I mean, my personal perspective is that they should grab one of those guys anyway. I'm just not a big believer in Geno Smith, and I don't think that front office is as much of a believer as well. But that being said, I still don't know if it buys him to the end of the year, though. I think, you know, every year for the past three, maybe 4 years, Rex Ryan has been on the hot seat. And he's going to have a pretty remarkable run to hang out to the end of the year, I believe. So I just don't think Percy Harvin is enough. I think that, you know, again, because of who you got under center, you won't see a big difference.
I agree, Reggie. I think that they have a lot of personnel issues right now over with the Jets. That organization needs a lot right now. I'm a little disappointed in Mr. Vick, because he was brought there specifically to groom Smith based on his style of play. And if he's trying to revert back to some of the same behaviors that he had early in his own career, then basically you now have the blind leading the blind, and I think that hurts Geno Smith's campaign there as that quarterback. I agree. I don't think a lot is going to change. I'm not sure if Coach Ryan will make it to the end of the season, just because they just had a lot of issues and they continue to compound themselves.
Can you imagine one of these college quarterbacks who either knows he's going to declare for the draft? I believe Winston has already put his name in the hat saying that he's not going to deal with college anymore. Probably a good decision on his part. But, you know, if you're Jameis Winston, you're thinking, man, do I want to play for the Jets? I mean, they're still trying to figure out a run game. They've got a couple guys doing okay. But you would have Percy Harvin. You would have Eric Decker. Who am I missing up there? Jeremy Curley. There's offensive weapons and people to throw to. It seems pretty enticing as long as you don't mind playing in a media market like New York.
Right, and that's just it. I would hate to see Jameis Winston go to New York. I mean, he can't handle Tallahassee, much less trying to go to New York. I mean, it's just too much out there. He needs to go to a small market team where there is nothing for him to do but play football, preferably with a coach that keeps, you know, an appendage, you know, near him at all times. I would hate to see him go there. But, yeah, but I mean, I think even offensively, I have to think about it. They got Chris Ivory in the backfield. Chris Johnson didn't quite work out or isn't quite working out, but I wasn't surprised about that. I just don't think that they're that far away. I think sometimes, as with the Atlanta Falcons, the voice of the coach gets muted. And I think that's just what's going on in New York right now. They're not listening to what Rex has to say anymore.
Yeah, and we'll get into that with the Falcons as well here in a few short minutes. But, you know, we are talking football, and we'll spend it a little more on the positive side as far as some of the things here. And we'll talk about, for a brief second, that older Manning boy decided to get another record the other day. He did it by halftime, which is about a quarter shorter than I thought he would, but Peyton Manning is now the all-time touchdown pass leader. He passed Brett Favre. I believe he has 5'10 and 5'11 now. I guess I'll ask this question, and then after we talk about it a second, I have another kind of almost poll-type question. But is this record still like a benchmark achievement, or is it because of the new rules and the new passing leagues that we kind of all knew it was going to happen?
I wouldn't personally say it's because of the passing league or the rules as it relates to Mr. Manning. I would say because of the intelligence of the guy. I mean, that's just taking it away from this guy. I don't care what team you put this guy on. I mean, the core remains the same. He's a guy that understands the game. He's a guy I heard an interesting statement out of one of my alum, Demarius Bebe Thomas, that mentioned that Peyton Manning raised him or taught him in football. I mean, out of all of these people he's been playing with, that was the guy that he said that taught him the game. So I think that speaks volume to the type of quarterback he is, and that, you know, they will follow this guy into the fire. And so, again, it's definitely a benchmark. I think he's going to probably add about 40 more touchdowns to it before it's all over. And it'll be unattainable because of just the type of player Peyton Manning is. He is the quintessential quarterback. And then, like I told my son the other night, I feel like he's the best quarterback that's ever played the game.
All right, Coach, how do you see it?
A couple of ways. Actually, I'm split on it. I have two ways that I'm looking at this, two schools of thought. The first school of thought is that Mr. Manning, Eli, and Peyton often go in the wintertime or in the summer months. They go out and they hunt out in South Georgia, okay? And
okay,
my wife's uncle takes them hunting every year. And so I asked him, who was the most competitive out of the two? He said, by far, it is Peyton, because he is such a silent killer, quote, end quote. I also think that it does have something to do with the rules. The reason being is because now you don't have, if you look at the league now, you don't see this ferocious pass rush as you used to see a couple of years back. And I think that says a lot. I mean, it even attributed to his injuries, being hit like he had gotten hit before. But nevertheless, I think that he still is a quarterback that would have broke this record. I don't think it would probably have been broken as fast if it wasn't so much for the rules. I think he would have broke the record, but I don't think the way that scores are in the NFL right now, that this would have held true, you know, 3 years ago. So I'm interested to see how it all turns out.
Yeah. Jeremy, I got a slight rebuttal to the coach there on that. I get the whole rules thing, and it's frustrating for some of these guys. But, again, we're not talking about Matt Ryan or Jay Cutler. We're not talking about a guy that holds on to the ball for 30 seconds in the pocket. I don't think I've ever seen him hold the ball more than 5 seconds at a given time. So I don't think the pass rush would have much to do with it because of the way he just reads defenses. And he knows where it's coming from. And how many times have we seen this guy get blitzed and the ball's out of his hand before they even get to the backfield? So I hear you on that, but I still think that guy still would have gotten it either way.
Oh, I'm
just, Reginald.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I think he would have gotten it, but I also look at where the NFL was 3 years ago and where it is now, and they have cushioned a lot of things. I mean, I won't, as a defensive coordinator, I cannot turn my head to that. Honestly, there are some things now. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'll just point to one thing in particular. Let's just look at the concussion rate. I think one of the things people don't look at, and as a matter of fact, the competition committee looked at it this past year. Just let's look at running backs. You know, we're talking about concussions and hitting unprotected receivers, but one of the things that the linebackers began to complain about is, like, when a running back comes through the hole and he drops his head, there's nothing to protect me other than the lower my pads. So, and then when you look at defensive backs, which is the position I coach, I think a lot of times people don't look at, a lot of times these guys look to not necessarily whip, but to avoid helmet-to-helmet contact, but when they hit the ground themselves, their head is bouncing up off the turf, and no one sees that underlying concussion 2 weeks later. So that's what I mean about some of the play on the rule does give the quarterback a little more cushion than they've had in the past, but again, he would have broke the record.
Gotcha. I digress.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm definitely a fan of Peyton's. I've watched him since his days at Tennessee. He is one of the better ones to play the game for sure. I mean, I think he's always going to be in the conversation at least for the next century or better, depending on who comes up. But, I mean, he was the first to do a lot of these things as Marino and Favre were then. The question is kind of a poll-related question, but I'm going to throw it to you guys, and I'll tell you my side of it too. If you were a player in the National Football League, would you rather have which of these four records would you rather have? The all-time rushing yards record, the record for the most touchdown catches, the record for the most touchdown throws, or the all-time sack leader?
For me, it would be the all-time rushing record.
Okay.
I think all-time rushing record, hands down.
Okay, Coach?
For myself, you know, I'm going to be biased and say sacks, because just due to the fact that with the sophisticated blocking that you have in the NFL and the double teams and even the triple teams chipping with the fullback coming out of the backfield, it's a lot harder to get sacks.
Yeah, and as much as I've always been, I kind of always favor the quarterbacks, at least throughout my early history to now. I got to say sacks as well. And the reason I say that is it's the only real record, of at least of those four, where it's an individual stat. Touchdown throws, you have to have a line to block. You have, most of the time, you have to have people that can actually catch the ball. That's why people like Geno Smith would never set a record, and Eli Manning as well. Touchdown catches, you got to have somebody to throw it to you. And rushing, you got to have somebody to block for you. You know, Emmitt wouldn't have half those yards without Moose Johnson chip blocking everybody.
Well, then neither would Michael Strahan have had all those sacks without somebody taking a double team for him on the other side. He wasn't just beating guys, you know, double teams one-on-one to get to the quarterback. He was going against one-on-one guys because there was a double or triple team on some other guy that's killing the quarterback from the other side. I mean, and from a passing perspective, you realize this is a passing league. When you go back and look at guys like Walter Payton and just think about what he was able to accomplish, first of all, you're starting a minimum of 5 to 5 yards behind the snap, and which they don't count because they only count from the line of scrimmage. And then you're getting hit by 300-pound linemen as you go through the line. On top of that, I mean, that says a lot for a running back, especially when the average running back's career is, what, 3 years, Coach?
That's correct. And one of the things, too, Reginald, and again, I'm just going to pick on you for the sake of picking on you right now.
That's okay.
let's look at the draft. Look at how far the running backs have fallen when it comes to placement in the draft. That kind of shows where it's going. But one thing about the NFL, and none of us, believe it or not, guys, are wrong with this, the NFL
right.
is a very trendy kind of sport. It's very fickle, and it just depends on what they want. If you go back and look at the era of those backs that you're speaking of, the great Walter Payton, back then those backs, you know, they could do it all. And then it started going into a trend where they went with the big backs. Let's talk about our friend of the show, Icky Woods. And, you know, Okoye and some of those other guys, Eddie George, they started going with the big backs, and then they went back to like a smaller traditional, you know, 5'10", 5'11", 205, 215 back. So it just it's very fickle, and that's just one of the positions that has kind of always stayed the same, is playing defensive end, whether you were tall, whether you were a little undersized, a little underweight, long-ranging, as in Jason Taylor when he was with Miami, by the way, which I thought was not going to be that very good of a defense because I thought he was too light, but he proved me wrong. It just kind of goes to show you how it just kind of trends. And I don't think any particular category we would have picked would have been wrong. It just depended on the era and the time.
Yeah, okay, slight rebuttal to that. And here's where because I do agree with you. I agree that everything's trendy. Everything's kind of trending towards the past. But I'll give you two teams right now that are showing that eventually you must come home. That is the Dallas Cowboys and the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons built their team to be pass first. Oh, we're the fastest team on turf without a running back and can't generate more than 5 yards at a time. Versus the Dallas Cowboys, who tried to go with pass first with Dez Bryant and Tony Romo, and eventually said, you know what, I think we got this great back here that, oh, by the way, has rushed for 100 yards in six straight games now? I mean,
seven. He has the
seven.
Record.
So you got to come back to the run. I haven't played when I played football, and I remember them sticking me on the defensive side of the line, and we had one of those big backs, a guy, Mark Anderson. I'll never forget him. Every time he came to the hole, I used to hate getting hit by this guy. And it wears the defense down. So I think teams are going to, while they're running to the pass, I think they're going to eventually have to come back to the run. It's just a matter of time. You always have to come home, and that's consistent. But I'll leave
and
it
I
there.
And I agree with you. No, I agree with you. I think it's starting to move that direction. I think if you go and look at how teams have been drafting lately, they've drafted a lot of pass rushers. They've drafted a lot of linebackers that can cover in space because that was the trend. But now I think what has happened, just like you spoke of, Reg, is that now quietly these backs are starting to show their worth, and they're getting their net worth, and we're going to see the tangible of that when we come to the next draft. We'll see if they're starting to move, benchmark that position back up into the third round, you know, second, third round. We'll be able to see it real soon.
Wow, I know I'm just always I'm amazed every week. I try to map out which things I think we're going to discuss and really get – really deep into, and the things I think we're going to pass over quickly, and didn't see this one coming. I know we're going to continue this debate for sure in future weeks because we seem to be on all sides of it. But I was able to get a couple sound bites that I was going to run past you guys in case you hadn't seen them or in case you have heard them or haven't heard them. One I wasn't able to get, but I'll kind of tell you the gist of what was going on with it. It is that ridiculously great, I mean, almost Oscar-worthy performance by the St. Louis Rams on the fake punt return. I believe it's called the Mountaineers now because it involved two former West Virginia Mountaineers. But, I'm sure you guys have seen it, and if not, I'll kind of try to paint the picture. For some weird reason, Seattle is in the process of punting, and that's not the weird thing. The weird thing is the punter kicks it. Most of the time, he always kicks it to the left, but everybody starts running to the right because Tavon Austin is back there, the returner for the Rams. Now, he acts like he's going to catch it and then falls flat on his back like he fell down. So everybody's rushing, trying to find the ball. They look at the other side of the field. Stedman Bailey is running. The only person near him is another Ram. All the way down, ends up getting the touchdown. The thing that stood out to me initially, and I'll get to the soundbite that I wasn't able to get, but the thing that got me is, why didn't the kicker run towards the left? Because he kicked it, he saw which way it went off his foot, and yet he still followed the other 20 people to the other side.
Hey, the story called the Pied Piper, remember that?
Yeah. But
Pied Piper's blowing his pipe, and blowing his flute, and all the mice follow him right into the ocean. I mean, it's you follow the trend. He saw where everybody else was going, and I thought the same thing. I'm like, dude, you kicked it. How did you not know that it was over there? So absolutely the most beautiful special teams play I have seen in quite some time in the NFL.
I would have to agree, guys. It was quite entertaining to see something quite different than what you normally line up and see. So it just goes to show you that anything's possible.
Well, and honestly, one of the first things I thought of as I was watching the game, I looked up and to the people beside me said, "You know what? I said, this reminds me of something Coach Hill might dial up in the Arena Leagues, that this would have been a fantastic play there, but to play out in the NFL like this, you kind of have to just scratch your head and go, what did I just watch?"
Absolutely. I was thinking the same thing. I said, you know what? This is something Coach Hill would come up with. He has that kind of a mindset that understands that everybody's going to follow the norm, so I'm going to throw a little wrinkle in here and come out on top.
I think both of you guys are correct. I think that it would be something that I would be sitting up at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, how can I add to this?
And Jeff Fisher, to his credit, said they were watching film and realized that the punter always kicked it to the high side on that side of the field, up where, because their bench side was up there where the ball actually went. And he just, I don't know, it was like a 30-second decision. He just kind of looked at the way they were lining up, just kind of gave the signal like, hey, let's give this a shot. But the soundbite I was trying to get was the Rams announcers who were calling this game. And I don't know if you guys heard this one, but basically it was to a point where the announcers believed that Tavon Austin not only caught it before he fell down, but that he threw a sideline-to-sideline lateral to Stedman Bailey, who then ran it all the way in. And once the first guy said it, the second guy goes, yeah, that was a beautiful play. I don't know what lateral they saw, because I never saw a pass during that one. Did you guys see one?
Absolutely not. It was a direct kick to the right side of the field, facing the touchdown. There was no way there was a lateral. It wasn't even time to do that.
No, I don't remember seeing a lateral either.
But I couldn't believe they kept playing that call, and I heard it over and over again on some of the other shows and stuff, and I was just like, what game are you watching? Clearly, they're not even watching plays, right? Or they're not watching kicks, at least.
Hey,
but
they need to call the end zone. We can come call the games for them.
Absolutely. You know, we got buddies and friends of the show that call games as well. But I'm going to try to play this other soundbite. It's kind of short, and hopefully you guys can hear it. If you can't, let me know. But let me try to cue this up real quick. Were you guys able to hear that?
No, sir, I was not able to hear it, Jeremy.
Okay. Well, it was Houston head coach Bill O'Brien at a press conference, and I think the reporter's name was Karen or something like that, who was asking him about that Houston Texans loss. And he just pretty much says, he goes, she's like, is this a positive or a negative you're taking away from this game? And first of all, he just kind of shouts out, what? Like, did you need something? And then he goes, what? No, Karen, I think this was a negative. We lost the game. And it's just, even though he come from the Belichick school of thought, it was funny to kind of hear him really get into it and give you a non-Belichick answer. He's a really passionate, fiery coach, and I think he's going to do good things in Houston. Were you guys able to hear did you hear it on other networks?
Yes, I actually did catch that, and I will tell you this, that is the one thing that my favorite team I feel like is missing. I don't necessarily subscribe to the school of thought with the coaches that are always rah-rah, a la Rex Ryan. However, I think that sometimes that's what your players need. They need to see some passion. It starts from the top. If your coach is passionate, then chances are you're going to be passionate. I mean, look at Pete Carroll out in Seattle. I mean, that guy's running up and down the sidelines. He's chanting. He's yelling. He's pumping his fist. He's doing these things. And sometimes that's just what you need to dig deep. And so I'm glad that he got out of the mundane, you know, Bill Belichick era that so many of these coaches seem to be following.
I agree. There are times as a coach you have to rally your troops. I think that every coach, every head coach, is tasked with the responsibility of creating an environment that also promotes the philosophy of winning. And so there are times in which I've been in locker rooms where tables were destroyed, papers flew, trash cans were kicked over, but the point was made. Mind you, it was not done all the time, and not ever was there a time it was taken out of context to be deemed unprofessional. But if the players don't see you believing in that what you say, then they will never accept what you say. So, yes, when you see Coach Carroll, he has found a very unique way of getting his players to buy into the enthusiasm, staying professional, but yet having fun like they did in college. I think that's what he learned from his first time in the league, and that's what he was able to bring back this time as to why he's been able to sustain himself.
Yeah, I definitely like this guy, and not just because of his pedigree, but, I mean, he seems to really get what you need to be a coach. And, like I had mentioned to you guys, we'll talk about here in Falcons On here in a few minutes. The new coach rumors that have surfaced for the Falcons as to if Smitty is let go, there's a new guy on the radar. And, Reggie, I think you'll be the most intrigued by it as we get to it. I'm not gonna really speak on it right now, but as far as Fiery, you know, it could be debatable on this guy. But I do want to hopefully you guys can hear this one as well. The little clip I'm gonna try to play. Let me try this real quick. Were you guys able to hear that one?
I was able to hear it very faintly, Jeremy.
Okay.
Likewise,
it was,
in my ear.
Okay. I'll have to work on that for next week. It's a new thing we're trying with some of these clips. But that was Saints head coach Sean Payton, who was a little fired up himself at the press conference. And this is the Sean Payton I like. This is the super, hey, I'm the coach, you know, listen to me type deal. And basically at his press conference, he kept getting asked the same question over and over again, and the guy who was asking the question would keep interrupting him during his answer to where finally he said, hey, you need to be quiet. I'm trying to answer your question. And it was hilarious that for once he was fighting back on the media, like, you wanted me to answer the question, at least let me answer the question.
Well, I'd like to comment on that, if I may, Jeremy.
Okay.
One thing that, as a coach, we actually get groomed, believe it or not, guys. We have intense sessions with our director of media operations with the team. And they're kind of like the lawyer, if you will. They kind of tell us, you know, what format an interview is going to take on and how we need to handle it. As a matter of fact, Dwayne Howard out of Kansas City is a guy that I, even to this day, prior to going into interviews or what have you, will call him and bend his ear a little bit on, you know, here's what I'm about to have to go on to the air or go into a media type of environment, and what are some of the things that I need to avoid or some of the things I can be passionate about but yet stay politically correct. So, yes, again, you know, every now and then a coach has to just show the human side of himself. If you notice on the sidelines, we carry a lot of poker faces, as I call it, a lot of very little emotion, good, bad, or indifferent. But from time to time, I think now the media is pushing a little too hard in some areas. Sometimes you have to, you know, strike back just to let them know that, you know, I respect what your job and what you have to do, but also respect mine as well in answering your question.
Yeah, I would say this. I think that there are just way too many rules in the game right now, that one being one of them. I didn't realize that players got fined, for instance, if they didn't deal with the media or answer the media's questions in some regard.
I just think that, you know, that's one of the things that's hurting the game amongst a whole lot of other things. You know, allow the passion, allow the emotion. That's what the fans want to see. We don't want to see the presidential side of this thing. Or, you know, we could care less about that. They're football players. They're not actors. They're not politicians. So sometimes, and the coaches as well. I mean, allow them to be who they are.
Right, and like I said, I agree with you guys as well, especially on the, you know, allow them to be actual people and not have to be pretty much robots who say the same things all the time. And it's always good to see the passion in coaches. Bill O'Brien and Sean Payton for sure are two that are very passionate. And that brings us to our last topic, and I purposely held it here for a reason. The Cowboys released defensive end Michael Sam. What are you guys' thoughts on this?
I was surprised without at least seeing them, you know, do whatever it took to kind of get him integrated, at least to see what he could do. I still think the kid can play the game, and I'm still upset that my own personal team didn't go, my own favorite team didn't go and pursue him. So I was surprised. I hope that someone figures it out and lets this kid at least show what he can do. But I was surprised Dallas didn't give him the opportunity.
For myself, I'm going to call Michael Sam as I did Anton Smith. Michael Sam. He is a phenomenal athlete. He was defensive player of the year in the SEC. He has proven himself on the field. In my opinion, I think there are things that cloud or for the lack of better terms, obstruct his ability to be on the field. But there's no question in my mind, I am calling this young man now Michael Sam.
Yeah, it's in a way – the odd thing to me is he gets drafted by the Rams, who clearly didn't need a defensive lineman / linebacker. He did have 3 sacks in the preseason, and these weren't coverage sacks. These weren't gimme sacks. He actually worked for those. The Rams let go of him. Dallas picks him up because at the time, on paper, they had the most atrocious defense anybody has ever seen. Suddenly, their defense gets really good. I understand them releasing him because for lack of a better thing, they don't have any room for him at this point. Oddly enough, because of injuries, the Rams now could use him as well. I could see the Falcons or the Rams trying to maybe add him just to see what he has. But, I mean, we'll kind of get into the Falcons a little more a little bit later. But as far as the Rams, I don't understand why they haven't tried to add him back at this point.
I agree. Sometimes when a team gets into this mode where they're winning or they're losing or they're tanking or whatever the case may be, you know, they kind of go a different route, as I think with the Dallas Cowboys. They think they're good, but, you know, I still think they're a mirage and just don't happen to be playing well at this time. But they're gonna pay for that decision, I believe.
I will go as far as to say this. If there is an opportunity to pick up an athlete such as Michael Sam's, you get this athlete. He comes with a great bang for the buck. Again, like I said, he's proven himself against the ones. I for the life of me, with as many defensive linemen that have gone down and so many teams needing a pass rusher, cannot figure out on the defensive side of the ball why you would not give this young man a shot. Again, like I said, you know, what do you have to lose? You don't have any money tied up in it whatsoever, and he's shown himself to be productive against in the preseason against the ones. So with that being said, I mean, again, you know, what is it that holds him back? What is the real deal?
Well, and in a way, in a very different direction, has Michael Sam, since he hasn't played, you know, hasn't suited up for an actual game, has he kind of become the new media Tim Tebow of this year?
Yes and no. No in the sense that, you know, Tim Tebow's decline, if you will, was based on his what people saw as far as his mechanics were concerned. I think Michael Sam has proven that he can play this game. I think it's solely, unfortunately, but it is solely based upon his sexual preference. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I think that, you know, his numbers and where he was and what he's done in the short time that he's been in the league, I mean, again, that's why when we're speaking of what record you would rather have is why I lean back to the pass rushing side of things. It is something that you have to, you know, you can develop it, but really you have to have a natural ability for it. And I think he stepped right into the role and proved that he could compete. And I don't think there's anybody out there, as far as a tackle is concerned, that would tell you that he can't play. I think a lot of tackles right now are probably happy that he's not playing, to be honest with you. Because right now the burst that he has when I watch him at the point of contact and as he pushes upfield is incredible, and you can't teach that. That's just something natural you have to have. So, you know, I would have to agree with you, Reginald. I mean, I don't see what are the roadblocks you have right now with a healthy player who doesn't cost you any money and who has proven himself.
It is very true, and you know, only time will tell. I think he'll land somewhere. I'm not sure where exactly that's going to be right now. But as always, we will stick to that for sure. And let's see. Nope, I don't think we had a trivia question this week. Do you guys have anything to add?
No, I'm good. I'm surprised you didn't have a trivia question for us, Jeremy. You've been stumping us for the past 5 weeks.
Well, I can't remember if I did this one last week or not. It involved the number 33. Did I do that last week?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
Or the week before, actually.
It was one of those weeks. Involved the Falcons?
Right.
Okay. I thought I did, but I couldn't. There was just in the midst of looking into this Percy Harvin thing, which took up a lot of the week, and into the Michael Sam stuff, I just didn't really find a trivia question I thought was worthy enough, I guess. So,
Impact is slipping, Coach Hill. He's slipping. Slipping on his opportunities.
Okay, well then, by the time we come back from the break, I'll come up with something.
Oh.
The pressure is now on.
That it is. For the Coach Haywood Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy York. This has been End Zone. Here after the break, we will have the more awesome part of the show, at least to Atlanta fans. Falcon Zone will be coming up at the top of the hour. We've got a lot of fun things to talk about, including telling you about some of the recent injuries and also who the new head coach on the radar could be. But we'll see you guys in a few short minutes for Falcon Zone. Jeremy, the Impact York from End Zone here. Would you or your business like to advertise with End Zone? It's easier than you think. With many packages available, we've got the perfect deal to help you promote your business to a whole new audience. All you have to do is contact us at 3endzone@gmail.com for more info and to get started today. Let us help you grow your business. We'll be right back. Man, that's right. At least according to LaJon Witherspoon from Seven Dust, Falcons are on top. Right now, I think they would be the fan favorite in Atlanta for best team. But then again, the rest of them don't look that good. We are here for Falcon Zone. I am Jeremy York, joined once again by the coach Haywood Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker. How we doing, guys?
Thank you.
Sorry, we had the technical glitch there. Are you guys still in with us?
Still here.
Okay. You know, I know we talked about Outkast before. Are you guys fans of any other Atlanta acts? I mean, like, I'm a big Seven Dust person, and I've listened to a lot of other Atlanta acts.
I'm a big T.I. fan. I like T.I.
Okay.
I am definitely a T.I. guy. I'm also a Seven Dust fan as well, so keep on playing those guys. They got a couple of other good hits out there.
Oh, more than a couple. I believe I have most of their albums.
Well, I need to come over there with my MP3 player then. And
yeah, definitely. Reggie, since you put me up to it, I think I've come up with a decent trivia question here. I'm just trying to fix some of the last little specifics on it.
He just couldn't let us win, Coach.
Well, you had
I know,
to
right?
Something.
I know. Such a competitor. That's why he's called the Impact.
Right.
Right. Exactly. You know, some people make impressions, others make an impact. That's where that came from.
I like it.
I like it, Jeremy.
It also involves pro wrestling and a lot of other fun things, but yeah, that's for another day. It is Falcon Zone, and we appreciate you coming back with us. We always have a good time with it, and especially getting to talk about the Atlanta Falcons, no matter how good or bad they're doing. Right now, it's a little on the south side, but you know it's still looking up. There's a lot of good things involved in it. I mean, could be worse. Could be Oakland.
Okay. I'll let you have
spoken
that
like
one.
A true, hey, see, Reggie is a vicious fan. I mean, he doesn't cut any corners when it comes to the high expectations of his team. That's a true fan.
Hey, trust me. As you know, usually on Mondays here on Impact Media, there's a Jaguar show, and to hear the positivity of a lot of their fans as well, because I mean they've been bad for a long time, and it seems like they're finally turning the corner. Atlanta's about to go through a phase where they're about to start making some really great strides as well. So fans, just stick in there and keep listening to us, because we'll tell you about all the stuff we learned.
Absolutely.
But you know, let's get right into that that game against Baltimore. What were you guys' takeaways from the Ravens Falcons game?
Oh, well, where do I start? I mean, it to me, it's a microcosm in that this is an exact replica so far from what I've seen of last year. It speaks volumes to the detractors of the whole Matt Ryan is an elite quarterback type of mindset, although at the end of the game, I don't think a lot of people realize he actually started to just say whatever and started doing some of those things he had been doing early in the year. But bottom line is, I mean, their defense was in his face 5 minutes. And from the height of the ball, they were in his face. The offensive line is a turnstile. And Matt Ryan has to have that offensive line in front of him that's going to give him time to throw. If you give him time to throw, he'll carve you apart. If you start hitting him, then he's not going to do that. I mean, to his credit or to his defense, when you've got the Ravens' deep front four in your face 99% of the game, I mean that's just what you get. Overall, though, what really concerns me is the lackluster attitude that the team seemed to have. I was telling Icky Woods, I was talking to him about the game, because obviously every time the Falcons lose, I get this call from him probably not less than 2 minutes after the game, where he's reminding me of how great they are not. But that being said, it reminded me a lot of the Cincinnati game and what I saw from the sidelines. I mean, there's bickering going on. There's obviously some disconnects going on there. There's no trust on the team, within the team. There's no leader. And I tell people all the time, as we're getting close to the trade deadlines, everybody's like, oh, we should trade for this person, trade for that person. You know what? We could trade for whomever we want to. There's no clear-cut leader on this team right now. There's no Brandon Marshall. Everybody got mad with Brandon Marshall when there was this tirade after the loss that the Chicago Bears took. Atlanta does not have that person. Not even their coach is that person. And I think that concerns me more than the fact that they're losing right now.
Well, you know what, Reginald? I beg to differ. I think you guys do have a leader. I think that he's not on the field, though. And I think that's in Anton Smith. I think what has happened with Atlanta, and I agree with you, there is no trust whatsoever. And I think this has come from the fact that they have seen this young man since 2009 grind out his situation and still doesn't have what I call a legitimate opportunity. He's getting spot time to play. But I think that he really is the leader of that team. And I think that if you saw a change in the running back committee where he was the featured back, and again, they're not going to expect him to do it all even when he gets in, let's say, for more reps. But the fact that they would felt that the organization did the right thing by playing him. I mean, everybody on the team knows why he's not playing, but the positive attitude that he brings, and I just kind of watch the energy of the offense when he's in the game, and I watch how people, even if defensive guys run to the side, even if it's a play that went for 15 yards and he got tackled or a catch that he made, they seem to go and quickly gravitate to that. You'll see this change in the environment, at least for a millisecond. But then overall, I agree with you. It goes right back to the bickering, the fussing, the fighting, the lack of leadership out of Matt Ryan, which that's where the money has been placed to lead the team. And I think that's where Matt Ryan's going to either have to step up as a leader of this football team and get the respect from his teammates, or they're going to have to make a move with Matt Ryan going into the 2015 season, believe it or not.
Well, you know what, and Jeremy, real quick before you come in here, it's interesting that you said that. Now, I will say this: I definitely agree with you in the fact that the team is looking for the coaches to play who's best suited to play. I don't know, Jeremy, if you could have caught the soundbite when they interviewed Jonathan Massaqua after the game, and you could tell he was biting his tongue. But one of the statements that he did make, and I'm paraphrasing here, was he mentioned that when we get to the point where we're playing guys, regardless of their salaries or regardless of where they were taken in the draft, I think we'll turn this thing around. And I thought that was very interesting. And another soundbite that I wish, I don't know if you guys heard, was I heard it on one of the NFL shows. They actually had Matt Ryan mic'd up just before they came out of the tunnel. And if you listen to him, his tone, it was confidence. It was very muddled, very low-key, not like a leader at all, not like Drew Brees saying, hey, we own the division, they know it, we know it, let's go show them. There was none of that, and you got to wonder if these guys, and Jamie Duke said it best, how would you feel if you're over here blocking for a guy that's making 10 times what you're making and you don't believe in what he's doing? So it's hard to detract those types of messages when you get it on film like that.
Well, and that's something I like about Jamie Dukes, is that even though he works here in Atlanta on 92.9, where our good buddy Harper LaBelle also works on the weekends, he's not afraid to call a spade a spade. And a lot of fans jump on him for it, but I mean, I'm even in a fantasy league with the guy, and the guy will just straight up tell you, even in that, different things. And, you know, I like that he'll come out and say stuff like that. Like, how are you going to validate, you know, like you said, blocking for somebody who makes 10 times what you do and sometimes acts like he makes 10 times more than you do?
Absolutely. And that was the thing. I know we talked about it, and I try to keep a positive spin on things, but I think it's my job to kind of give the real approach to this thing.
And I told you guys about the benefit that I went to where he was present. And out of all the players that were there, the great Tony Gonzalez was there. I mean, Hall of Fame tight end was there. And there was more interaction out of a guy that had the right, in my opinion, to be standoffish than there was Matt Ryan. And you got to wonder sometimes what some of the players are thinking on that sideline when they're looking at this guy. It's like, you know, hey, we're not going to follow this guy into the fire. And then you compound that with the coach, and I know we're getting ready to get into that here shortly, who I also think is on mute. I think about Mike Smith, I think about the teacher from Charlie Brown and Peanuts, you know, the wah-wah-wah-wah-wah. He's talking and nobody's hearing him. And it's just, it's painful to watch. It is painful to watch when you know that the team is going to continue to do what they did in Baltimore. They had the opportunity. I think the defense, I will give kudos to the defense because I think the defense played ball. They played the best that they could, but the offense wasn't producing a thing. I mean, Baltimore ran up the score. What did Flacco have 5 or 6 touchdowns against the Tampa Bay Bucks? I mean, the defense played their best that they could, and the offense just didn't do anything. And we placed all of our money in the offense. Please tell me that at least we can score points when you have missed Thomas Dimitroff, when you have garnered and given away all of our draft picks in the name of offense. We can't score more than 7 points. It's frustrating. And I just think Arthur Blank is getting to the point now where, you know what, we as a fan base, if you're asking me to pay PSLs, you're going to have a tough time getting me to play PSLs watching this team.
And that is ultimately what it comes down to, is you're trying to fill a new arena that if you go to a game at the Dome, you get to pretty much sit side by side with the one they're building. And they're just really breaking ground on it. But, I mean, it's really hard to validate paying for those PSLs or even paying for tickets down the road when you sit there and look and go, well, if this is the product you're showing me, I don't want to see it in any arena. It's disappointing to watch.
Right. I don't even want to watch it on TV, much less pay the $1,800 per seat that I'm paying right now to go and watch this in live and in color. Give me my money back. I mean, I think that's where a lot of fans are right now.
I tell you guys, and I'll get off this real quickly, what I found interesting when I looked at the televised game of Atlanta and Baltimore, if you notice that there was a brief moment in which they showed Mr. Blank on the sidelines and Mr. Dimitroff standing next to him. What I found interesting was something that was a play in which Mr. Blank turned toward the camera. He kind of walked away, and you could immediately feel or sense the disconnect between the owner and the general manager immediately. So I think the writing is already on the wall. I think that unless they just do something remarkable in London, I mean, hitting on all cylinders, and I don't think it saves it. I think it puts a Band-Aid over a bullet hole. But I think the only reason they haven't made the move now is because all of the preparation that went into preparing to go into London. And I think that's the only reason why. But I think as far as the tenure, I think it's up. I think it's over. And I think, honestly, Atlanta's about to move on, and so is Mr. Blank.
Right, and I'm with you on that, Coach.
Yeah, absolutely. And the final score on that game was Falcons 7, Ravens 29. And I just, for a second, I thought the Falcons were still in it. And then, I've kind of made the argument on and off this show a few times. Even earlier, I mentioned it as well. Between Phillip Rivers, who is about to beat Peyton Manning here in a few minutes, and Joe Flacco, just when these guys start to roll, I mean, they're almost having MVP-like seasons up to this point, at least dark horse seasons. And adding Steve Smith to the Ravens made them even more lethal. Now he's throwing to people he actually knows their names, and Steve Smith is one of those guys who's not afraid to get in somebody's face. Was it Trufant who practically got punked out during that little scuffle?
No, actually, it was Ishmael. It was the safety, Kamal Ishmael,
that
got his helmet ripped off of his head in the end zone by Steve Smith. Trufant actually stood his ground, believe it or not. But, yeah, I mean, and it just speaks to, you know, and I hear a lot of fans go, you know, they spent so much time on Hard Knocks professing to the world about how tough they were, and here you have it, you know, Steve Smith doesn't play the radio when it comes to
toughness. I mean, and just across the board. I mean, I think Chicago exposed Atlanta. And it, for me as a fan, it's tough to watch Atlanta continue to lose the teams. And then the very next week, the teams they lost to gets their behinds handed to them. I mean,
yeah.
It just shows exactly where we are. And I have to be realistic as a fan and realize that, hey, we're just not as good as we are as we say we are.
Yeah, I think it's definitely right at that. And we'll kind of get into the injuries real quick because we had another one go down. This time your backup center, Peter Konz, is I believe he's on the IR now, if I heard correctly, which forced, make sure I get his name right, James Stone, I believe.
Yep, James Stone.
James Stone, who is a undrafted rookie, I believe. But when he first came into the game, Joe Hawley, the normal starting center, tweeted out, oh, Stoney's coming in, no problems here. He said something along the lines of some sort of encouragement. And from what I saw, nobody come through the middle after Stone come in. Did you guys see anybody get past him?
Yeah, and I hats off to James Stone. He absolutely anchored that center spot very quickly. And again, it speaks volumes to even last year. How many players are on the Falcons team, a la Jonathan Massaquah, who, hats off to him, that guy was in the backfield the entire game. I mean, how many of these players, the Anton Smiths, the James Stones, that are sitting on the bench, the Jock Smiths, who's still on the practice squad, who's better than any linebacker we have short of Prince Shimbo right now, how many of these guys are on the team that just aren't playing because Mike Smith will not allow them to play? It's the microcosm of the Falcons. I mean, I was actually glad to see James Stone. I've never been a big fan of Peter Konz. I think he's soft. I think it showed when Hawley. Hawley just showed he was more tough than he was. And I think Stone is going to be what we need in the center spot. Once he gets into shape, I think he'll be fine.
I agree, Reginald. I think this is where the Falcons, this is the big question mark in the dark cloud that's over this organization right now. I don't think that the Falcons by no means are untalented. I think they have a lot of talent. I think that their talent is not always on the field at the right time and in the right situations. And I think that's where this disgruntledness, if you will, or this team breakdown has gone, because there are players out there that are ready to play right now. They are ready to play. And if you go look at any of the other teams during their developmental years, they always played all of their players. You have 53 guys over there. Rotate and play those guys. I agree with you. One of the things that the Falcons have been notorious for is waiting till guys are hurt, going to be out a couple of weeks, and or out for the season. And now you're trying to take a guy who's the quote-unquote, for the lack of better terms, the backup, stick him in against a guy who's already been playing either as the starter or the backup who's gotten some significant play over the last several weeks. This is where the Falcons are losing this team. You got to make everything by committee. If you really want the Falcons to swing this season and turn it around, there are no safe jobs, not even down to Matt Ryan. If he plays horribly, you put C.J. Yates in and you keep moving, i.e., you see that same philosophy playing itself out with the Washington Redskins and a personal friend of mine, Coach Jay Gruden. He is not wasting any time jumping in and saying my quarterback position right now, although Griffin's third is the starter, it is by committee at this point.
Well, and to quickly interject, I didn't mean to cut you off there, Reggie, but, you know, not to get off beat of the Falcons all that much, but as far as possibly teams moving on from what looked like the dominant starter, me and you, Coach, were talking earlier about possibly Russell Wilson being looking at that in the next couple years. The fact that Pete Carroll's system is such a system that it's kind of like Andy Reid in Kansas City. You don't really need the star quarterback running the plays. You just need the guy to stand there and not turn the ball over.
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. I think that, you know, depending upon who comes in next and if my favorite candidate comes in next, I think you're going to see that. I think you're going to see them start to get rid of these backup quarterbacks that, you know, absolutely have no chance of starting or ever being an NFL-caliber quarterback.
I think you're going to see this guy bring in somebody that keeps Matt Ryan on his toes. You're going to have to play for this $100 million contract, and I wouldn't doubt that Arthur Blank would be okay with that. I mean, again, $100 million is a lot of money for you to be standing back there doing mediocre things. You're doing, and I'll put this out here, and I know a lot of fans don't want to hear this, but this has been my belief, and I've said it before. The Atlanta Falcons are going to have to make that same decision about one Julio Jones here coming up next year.
It's very true. And real quickly, I will just go ahead and make the groundbreaking announcement that I have thrown my own hat into the perennial race to be the new Falcons head coach. So, Arthur, if you want to go ahead and call me, I have my two assistants already lined up, and I believe between the three of us we can turn this around.
Oh, absolutely. Just with common sense, we can turn it around. Play who's play who's better suited. It's that simple. It's not rocket science. You play who's ready to play, who's giving you the energy. Sit Corey Bierman. Sit Steven Jackson. Sit these guys that aren't doing anything, but they're commanding this money. And I think that Massaqua said it very quietly, but he said it best. Play the guys that are ready to play regardless of where their draft status was or what their contract says.
I agree 100% with you, Reggie. As a matter of fact, I would go ahead. Here's my thing with Matt Ryan. And, again, I don't want to just pick on Matt Ryan, but you are costing that organization a substantial amount of money. Matt Ryan is – He is a perfect storm, and I use that kind of loosely. And what I mean by that, he needs everything perfect around him. And when you go and try to put him with the elite quarterbacks, the Aaron Rodgers, the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Brady's, he just doesn't fit into that mold. He is just not that type of guy. And I don't think he'll ever be that type of guy. One of the most disheartening things for me to watch the Falcons play, and I've mentioned this to you before, Reginald, in the form of text messages, is that when the game is now officially out of reach, you'll begin to see Mr. Ryan have this deer in the headlight look. He'll just start, you know, just abstractly throwing balls left and right. He pushes passes, and I'm just watching him as a coach. And I'm going, he walks with this mentality at that point. For instance, if the Falcons are behind 14 points, expect Matt Ryan to put them in position to score. But if they're in a clutch situation where they need the touchdown and the two-point conversion, don't put your money on it. You know, and I watched this over time with him. And that's my concern with him, is that if he doesn't have the perfect storm around him, perfect receiving core, perfect line, perfect running back, just perfect everything, he just doesn't produce like that. And that's not a $100 million guy.
Right, and to that point, Jeremy, real quick, that's one of the things that I've heard from quite a few fans that, you know, there's always this dilemma between the fan base in that you have quite a few fans that still reach back into the Michael Vick era. And I will say one thing about Mike Vick, regardless of all of his shortcomings, the defense, you could tell, felt like if we can get Mike Vick the ball one more time, that's all we need.
Yep.
If we need a score, let's make the stop. Let's put the ball in his hands, and he's going to score. You do not see that with this team right now.
And as we kind of transition out of that, just because I want to get to this real quickly before we talk about the Lions and Falcons game, did you guys hear who the new coach on the radar could be? And it's just rumors. I haven't heard any concrete evidence that he's even on the radar, but it's a new name added to the mix.
Well, I've heard a couple. I've heard that is definitive that Harbaugh is going to lead the 49ers. It's also been definitive that Rex Ryan is going to lead the Jets. Those are the two guys that I've heard short of John Gruden. I've also heard that John Gruden is very interested in playing and coaching the Falcons with total control, obviously. But those are the three names that I've heard at the top of the pile right now.
I would agree, Jeremy. Those are the names that I've heard as well.
Well, and you mentioned the guy that I heard. The recent one was Rex Ryan. As far as I think people are just wanting anybody to come in and fix the defense. And while I agree that Rex Ryan is a very, very good defensive coach, I don't necessarily like how he deals with an offense or even special teams. So I would hope that – Arthur does his homework enough to know that Rex is a good coordinator. He's not a good leading guy.
Well, I think he already has, Jeremy. That was my argument with one of the fans that spoke about Rex Ryan being a great pick. Rex Ryan, for those who don't know or don't remember, actually interviewed for the position when Mike Smith was hired, and he
Correct.
Was not hired, along with Lovie Smith. So he was actually one of the head coaching candidates back when Blank was looking for somebody to coach the Falcons when they hired Smith. So he already has done his homework. But I will say this real quickly, the one guy that I would hope, because one of the other trends, and we talked about trends a little bit on the end zone, one of the trends that I think a lot of GMs and a lot of owners are starting to figure out is, hey, we're bringing these guys in who are fresh out of college. These guys are coming in 2 years removed from college. They still have that college player type mentality, and I think that's why you're seeing a lot of these college coaches coming into play, and they're actually starting to get some strides and make some strides in the NFL. One of the coaches that I would love to see the Falcons bring in, if he would be willing, would be Dabo Swinney from Clemson. I like that guy's energy. I like what he brings to the team, to his team, and I would love to see the Falcons consider him as a possible head coach.
Wow, I like Dabo Swinney. I like a lot of things he does. I did want to harp back on something real quick. You said that Atlanta had the chance to hire Lovie Smith and hired Mike Smith instead, his distant cousin, I guess. But we'll just play Fantasyland for a second. Can you imagine if 7 years ago this team would have rebooted and restarted with Lovie Smith?
Hey, I tell you what, we would not be having the defensive problems we would have. We would not have Julio Jones. We would have a premier defense. And again, like Coach Hill just mentioned, Lovie Smith would have been smart enough to say, hey, I've got a quarterback that I know I need to put a massive 300-pound-plus lineman, offensive line in front of this guy, get him a between-the-tackles running back. I think we'd definitely be in a much, much better position than we are now.
Oh, I agree. And with that being said, I'm going to call it early, and we're going to see if I'm right about this. If Atlanta is serious, and I really mean this, underline the word serious, about turning this around, go get John Gruden. John Gruden can turn this team around. With control of football operations, John Gruden will turn the Falcons around. I promise you. He is that guy that can do it right now. He's not too far removed. I don't think it needs to be a coach that's currently in the NFL. The reason being is because he doesn't have to have that relationship across the board. I think he comes in fresh and new. And because he deals with quarterbacks, he immediately, one or two things happen. Matt Ryan either buys into it now and changes, or he's on his way out the door.
Yeah, I'm never going to argue with you if you want to bring in anybody named Gruden, but John Gruden in particular. He's one of my be-all, end-all, number one coaches. He's the whole reason I started following the Bucks years ago. I do agree with the points you made for sure, but real quickly in the last 5 minutes or so we have here, pretty much the way I see the Detroit-Atlanta game playing out is Matt Stafford is going to fling the ball all over the place. Most of the time it's going to go to his team. He's going to throw his normal interceptions. Him and Jay Cutler have very similar numbers for very similar reasons. But whether Calvin plays or not won't matter. I think Detroit's going to win by probably at least 10 points. I hope Atlanta proves me wrong. But what you're going to really see that's going to really drive this home to Atlanta fans, and if not, at least I'm bringing it to their attention so it will, you're going to see the guy that you should have traded for in Ndamukong Suh, who's going to be in the backfield and have probably at least 2 sacks on Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jeremy. Unfortunately, I have to agree with you. I will say this. I think the defense plays a lot better. I think they play about the same that they played against the Ravens. I just think the offensive line is just too damaged right now, and Matt Ryan is just not that guy that's going to get it done. I think Detroit pummels Atlanta. I don't think it's going to be close. I'm actually hoping that it's not close, because then that guarantees, in my opinion, you know, you've got two former head coaches on staff. You got a former GM on staff that can obviously serve in the interim And I think much like the Oakland Raiders, you need somebody to come in and bury the football and kind of reset this team in a terrible NFC South, in which, strangely enough, Atlanta still has an opportunity to win it. But I actually hope they lose so that we can see the end of the Mike Smith era. I'm done.
Wow, strong words, Reginald, strong words.
Well, especially as good as I've gotten to know you, Reggie, and all the people that, you know, especially at the tailgates and a lot of your friends and the other passionate fans and everything, I think you very much speak for the fan base when you say that. It's time to turn the corner on everything and turn the page, so to say. And I mean, for the most part, that's exactly what needs to happen. I just want to bring this up real quickly. Oddly enough, Detroit shipped all their guys over to London, only to let go of a running back who got released and now has to come back home. And also, when the Raiders went to play their game in London, they actually fired their head coach on the way back. So, you know, this could happen in two straight London games where one team comes back without a head coach. But I guess we'll have to get up at 9:30 a.m. here in the East Coast, 6:30 West Coast time. If you're somewhere in between, I'm not doing math right now, so you have to figure out your own time. But I guess we'll get up early on Sunday and figure out what happens.
Yeah, I'm just saying go Lions. It's time. It's time. If we're going to turn the corner, then the time is now. I mean, you've got to salvage what you can salvage this year. But obviously, it is so very clear that the team is just disconnected from this guy right now, and it's time to move on.
Yeah, that would be one of my takeaways that I didn't mention earlier, is that I told everybody, I said, just, you know, as anybody would come up and I was watching the game, I was like, just watch the player reaction, just watch Mike Smith. No matter what he does, if he screams, he yells, he throws something, he high-fives somebody, pats on the back, no matter what he does, you can tell these players are already done. They no longer want to play for him.
I mean, he's so real quickly, Jeremy, I go back to the game against the Tampa Bay Bucks where Devin Hester basically made NFL history. He goes to the sideline. He's very emotional. He's crying. He's on the sideline. Mike Smith walks up to him. They have him mic'd up. He's like, what's going on? What's wrong? He's like, I'm just so happy. He's like, well, yeah, that's what we brought you here for. You know, so removed that this guy just broke Deion Sanders, who is his mentor, who is this guy, who is, you know, this guy made NFL history, and you just missed that. I mean, it just speaks volumes to where we are. First of all, let me also say this. I thank Mike Smith because he came in and he gave us credibility to a degree. I mean, in that, you know, he gave us, in the 6 or 7 years he's been here, has been some of the best years we've had as a pro team. But you know what? It's time to move on, Mr. Blank. It's time.
Well, he's hit his glass ceiling. He's moved him up the next level, but in order to get to the next dance, it's going to have to be somebody else, I believe.
Hey, Tampa Bay did it with Tony Dungy and bringing in John Gruden, so I think John Gruden can come in and do the same thing.
Yeah, and I'd like to add something just before we close down. I think the one thing that also gets missed is that Atlanta is a city of distraction. Atlanta is what California and L.A. was at one time. Atlanta is what New York was at one time when Parcells was there. And now Atlanta is faced with that same type of situation. I think so many of these guys are getting caught up in the Hollywood of the South, if you will, called Atlanta. That also is starting to show in their performance. You know, I mean, at any given time, you probably got those guys running around Atlanta when they need to be at home in some playbooks, off their feet and focused on their jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. And real quickly, just a quick plus or minus, I'll say 20. Did Icky Woods in his career score more or less than 20 touchdowns?
He scored more. He talked about it in Cincinnati.
Yeah, more.
He did. He had 27. And we wish the best for Icky Woods and hope to have him on here in a couple weeks, actually. And the Javonte Woods Foundation, you can go to that website. We also have it up on our site in case you want to donate or learn. learn more about the dangers of asthma and asthma attacks. But for the Coach Haywood Hill and Mr. Reggie Walker, I am Jeremy the Impact York. We'll see you next week.